Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It is a terrible, terrible disease. Alzheimer's disease is more than memory loss. It is a mentally and physically debilitating disease. It's also challenging for family members and caretakers. Well, November is Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month, and tonight during our Medical Monday conversation, we'll have information for you about the disease, and you'll also hear from a former elected official who lost his wife to Alzheimer's disease. We begin tonight with Dr. Mosunola Oyewusi, assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at the Howard University School of Medicine, and Rushern Baker, former Prince George's County executive and board member for the Christa Beverly Foundation. If you have comments or if you have questions about Alzheimer's disease, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Oyewusi and Mr. Baker, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you.
Dr. Oyewusi, let me start with you and kind of set the conversation with what is Alzheimer's disease? And a lot of people are so unfamiliar with it and the fact that it is still a very deadly disease.
Yes, thank you again for having me.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate, this disorder. It is the most common cause of dementia, so it's important for everyone to understand the concept of dementia, which is a generic term that describes a progressive disorder where a person has a constellation of symptoms. They have memory problems, they can have confusion, they can have problems processing information, completing daily tasks, and they have a change in their communication with other persons and carrying out regular daily activities on their own. Mm. With Alzheimer's disease, there's a specific pathology that causes shrinkage of the brain and specific parts of the brain that have to deal with memory, one's emotions, and that could also be the cause of some of the other symptoms that aren't generally highlighted but unfortunately are affected in persons who have Alzheimer's disease.
Drill down a little bit more for us about that. What are some of the initial signs that someone may notice? And when is this usually most present for the people who suffer from the disease?
Right. So as I mentioned, it's progressive. So there are changes that are going on in the brain with everyone as everyone ages, and age is unfortunately a factor in developing Alzheimer's disease. But as everyone ages, there are plaques that are formed, there are proteins that cloud up the brain cells and affect their function. And for whatever reason, these changes can accumulate to a point where someone will have like mild changes in their ability to remember things. So it'll initially start with short-term memory problems. And persons in their family, they might not realize it until it gets to a point where they're forgetting important things like birth dates, names of family members, remembering when to pay for bills. And those changes are noticeable in one's 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, but they could have had changes before then that are so mild that, you know, they're so and so subtle that one doesn't know that this could be a problem later down the line.
Mr. Baker, the difficult story regarding your wife and her journey and through this disease is well known in our area. And you've been very, very open about it before she passed away and since. But Krista Beverly was diagnosed in her 40s, which, you know, as Dr. Owoyusi just said, is, you know, kind of, it's unusual, what they call, I guess, early onset Alzheimer's. Talk to us about when you first began to notice a change.
Well, first of all, thank you for airing this discussion. I think it's very important, especially for those of us in the African American community and the Latino community, which sometimes we don't seek out the help that we need. The doctor is absolutely correct. My wife was 48 when she first started showing signs, but we didn't know it was going to be early signs of Alzheimer's or dementia. We just knew she was forgetting little things, and it wasn't until she actually, I was away on a business trip, and she was with my oldest daughter and was trying to go back to her home that she grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and got lost, literally on the same street where she grew up. And my daughter called me, and lucky for us, and we were different from a lot of, you know, families that go through this, is that we had some really close friends who were doctors at Howard University. One was my family physician. And he just noticed that while she could remember stuff, there was something that just wasn't right. And he was just like, you know, it's like she's responding just a little slower than I'm used to her responding, and you should continue to get her checked out. So for about 2 years, we noticed little things, but we would take her in for an exam, to have a brain exam, to in terms of, you know, they would do the test, diagnostic test, ask her about the kid's birth, what she saw that day. And pretty much she was smart enough to pass all of those things, but she was slow to answer. In about around age 50 is when she was finally diagnosed with early onset, because once we took the test, then she could not remember the children's name. She could still function. If you saw her when she was 50 years old, you wouldn't notice anything, especially if you didn't know her, you know, earlier, you know, in going to college with her or high school, you wouldn't notice anything different. She seemed very nice and very passive, which was not her. She was very nice, but she was not a passive person. You know, simple things like knowing how to get to the kids' school, high school, which all three of our kids went to the same high school, she couldn't do, couldn't get back to Richmond, and so, and we eventually couldn't drive. So the important thing about, in our work as a family working with the Alzheimer's Association, the important thing is about folks to get tested when they see these signs, so that they can prepare themselves, so they're not caught by surprise, which we were, but we would have been even more surprised had we not had a doctor as a family friend who actually advised us to look into this.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease tonight. This is National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month, in the month of November. If you have questions, if you have comments, please give us a call. We have an expert on the line. We'll be joined a little bit later by another doctor to talk about this. Also, Rusher and Baker, former Prince George's County executive, and he's also a board member of the Krista Beverly Foundation, named after his late wife. Again, 202-319-7810. You know, Mr. Baker, I remember you and I have had several conversations about this when you were a county executive after your term ended. And I remember, you know, one of the things I do remember you saying was, you know, as being a, you know, part of this caretaking team, obviously you were a husband, but you were part of this caretaking team. But like you said, your wife was very nice, but she was not a shrinking violet. And I remember you speaking about the fact that she could no longer speak and what that was like for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, one of the things that why what you're doing today is so important is, you know, there are caretakers out there. Most of them are unpaid caretakers. They're family members, their spouses, their partners, their children. And it's a long journey. My wife lived about 13 years after the initial diagnosis. And so each day it's different. You know, we would come home and then something would change. Either there was a point where she could no longer walk, and then we got to the point where she could no longer speak. And adjusting your life and trying to make it as normal as possible was really difficult. And so without a support system, both at the family level, but also both in terms of organizations that do this, like we relied heavily on the Alzheimer's Association of the Capital Region. We also relied on programs that were done at other facilities, especially in the county, and caregiving groups where individuals could come in, get information. But also one thing that is not talked a lot about is respite care for caregivers.
Mm.
It's a 24-hour. I would work a full shift as county executive, but many of the people, especially if they were close to me and my executive staff, know that when I got home, because we kept my wife at home during the entire process, it would be my shift when I got home. And some nights, she wouldn't be able to sleep.
Mm.
And so having respite care for people who are doing this is really important because they do need a break. A lot of the caregivers go through a lot. As I said, I was very fortunate that my children were there and that I had a real big support network. But a lot of folks don't. And so getting this information out and how they can help and the things when those difficult moments come up, I talk a lot about the fact that early on trying to get figure out how to brush your teeth
mm-hmm.
became one of the most significant incidents of my life. And I turned to the Alzheimer's website and got instruction on how actually you can do this without, you know, becoming so frustrated.
Yeah.
And so little things like that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease during this month of November, Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month. This is a Medical Monday conversation. Kristen, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Kristen. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Go right ahead.
How are you? And this is Christian, not Kristen.
Okay, Christian. Yes. Go right ahead, please.
Well, I wanted to know, is Alzheimer's disease similar to dementia? And I'm asking because my mom is caring for my Nana. She's been doing this for about 1.5 years or so. And my Nana is having trouble remembering things, and she does have some falls a lot, and she walks with a cane or a walker.
Mm-hmm. Let me see if Dr. Oyewusi can revisit that dementia and Alzheimer's conversation that we had at the top of the program. Doctor, please go right ahead.
Yes, and thank you, Christian, for calling in. Actually, Alzheimer's is a form of dementia. Dementia is a generic term. There's other types of dementia, like frontal temporal dementia, or dementia can be caused by strokes. Unfortunately, if someone has a stroke in parts of the brain, especially the what we call the cortical area, the top layer of the brain, they're more susceptible to having progressive changes in their memory or ability to carry out simple tasks. So mm-hmm. I can't say necessarily what is the cause of your grandmother's condition, but mm-hmm. What I would do if your grandmother came to see me, I would do imaging studies to one, see if there are any structural changes to her brain that will point to one of the possible causes that I mentioned. I would learn more about her medical history, anything that she might have been exposed to, if she's had any physical trauma, head injuries, or now we're actually even seeing that emotional trauma could be a factor to someone developing memory changes and dementia in the future, possibly increase their risk of Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. So all these things, in addition to lab studies to rule out any metabolic causes or infectious processes that can affect one's ability to be awake, be aware of the environment, and act as they might have been some years ago, will be done.
Okay.
And
go ahead, Kristen, real quick. I'm running out of time.
Okay,
go ahead, please.
Okay. When the other person was saying about people with Alzheimer's getting the respite and stuff, my mom is burning out with helping my nana.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Baker, real quick, where can people find out about respite help as well as go for information for support real quick before the break?
Okay. It's you can go to the Alzheimer's website, which is alz.org, and that will have information there. There's also a 24-hour hotline. And also in your city and in your county, there are your family services and senior services that will have information about caregiving and respite care. There's one last thing real quick is that there's a dementia friendly that is in Prince George's County that also can provide information to those out there.
And what's it called?
Dementia friendly.
Dementia friendly. Okay.
Yeah. If you go to their website, you can see the information they'll have. But it's very important that there is respite care for caregivers.
Yeah. Kristen, thank you so much for your phone call. Laverne calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you next. But first, we're going to take a break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast, including this one on WHUR.com. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in just a few seconds on SiriusXM. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month. That is the month of November. It's a horrible, horrible disease, a deadly disease. It is a slow disease. It is mentally debilitating, physically debilitating. But we on this program are here to help along with our guests. We continue with Dr. Mosanola Oyewusi, assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at the Howard University School of Medicine, and Rushern Baker, former Prince George's County executive and board member for the Christa Beverly Foundation, named after his late wife. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Laverne calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Laverne. What's on your mind?
Okay. I just wanted to say that my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at the age of 61, and it came from my dad used to beat my mom a lot, so the doctor said that that it was due to the brain injury. So we tried to have her to live with us, but she couldn't remember. So we put her in a nursing home, and she passed away at 61 because she was not. She forgot how to chew her food, and she was not chewing her food properly, and it sat in her lungs for so long, and she died from a pneumonia. And they said that her brain was not able to let us know that she was not feeling well.
Laverne, thank you for sharing that with us. You know, Doctor, you alluded to physical trauma as a possibility of a contributing factor regarding Alzheimer's. Your thoughts about what Laverne was saying, and also I'd be interested in hearing from you what is actually going on in the brain once this disease takes hold.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Mr. Fisher. So with in terms of the pathophysiology, there's an accumulation of the protein, the amyloid peptides within cells.
So you're going to I'm going to have to stop you right there because you're the only doctor on the line right now. So you're going to have to back up and slow down for all of us. Maybe Mr. Baker may have caught a little bit of that, but so walk me through that real slowly, please.
Okay. So amyloid is a protein. You could just consider it a protein that prevents the brain cells from performing well. Think of it as junk in the brain cells, okay? And or metabolites that occur naturally. As the brain cells age, these metabolites will accumulate over time. But with injury, like physical injury, exposure to illicit substances, like certain drugs or certain medications, there can be an exponential amount of these metabolites accumulating in the brain cells.
And what does that mean?
So that there's more cells that are not performing as they should.
Uh-huh.
So the brain cells are communicating through electrical. Oh dear. Yeah, they're communicating to allow the body to perform the task, you know, have the body move and note that I'm feeling something out in the environment, or I have this emotion when I see a nice, you know, fresh baked apple pie, or that I see my mom in front of me. But what happens is that those brain cells in the limbic system, which is the area of the system that process emotion, or the parts of the brain that have to do with making executive decisions, like, okay, I have to pay my bills and I have to remember my social security number, those cells are not working as they should. Okay, and it's a progressive, a very slow, insidious process. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is how age is a factor regarding Alzheimer's disease. And this is how trauma, because the physical trauma, these drugs, they increase the metabolites, the junk that are created, and they can factor into someone developing Alzheimer's disease.
Joining this conversation now is Dr. Corinne Pettigrew. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Dr. Pettigrew, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. You know, one of the things, in one of your specialties, along with in Alzheimer's disease, is cognitive aging. Today, in the DC Metro, one of the oldest people in our region, Mrs. Virginia McLaurin, who is probably very famous for a viral video of her dancing with President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama when the Obamas were in the White House back in 2016. She was 113 years old and she had all of her faculties. She was a diminutive woman. She was very spirited. And from all accounts, up until her passing today, had no signs of anything like dementia or Alzheimer's. And yet we know that Alzheimer's is often a disease that affects those who are older. But why might you imagine that there are some people who live very, very long lives into their 80s and 90s, even centenarians,
who do not develop dementia or Alzheimer's?
That's such a great question. She sounds like such a fabulous woman that everyone would want to know.
Indeed, indeed.
So I think one point to make is that everyone does experience slight changes in their memory and thinking abilities as they age. And for some people, as you mentioned, these changes are just slight. We don't have a great or a perfect understanding of why some individuals go on to develop dementia and some do not. There are certainly some genetic factors that contribute, but that's not the whole story in the majority of cases. Instead, it seems like there are some kind of lifestyle factors that play a big part. Our general health, the health of our vascular system and our heart plays a big role. And that means, you know, being physically active and keeping our brain active, staying socially engaged, which it sounds like this person most certainly was along all those fronts.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, things we can do to protect our brain health may put us along that more positive trajectory. And we're, you know, from a research standpoint, we're just now really beginning to understand how that might happen.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jill, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jill. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I'm listening to this program, and it's very interesting, but it kind of brought up that I was my mom's main caregiver, and she had something called cerebral vascular disease. And this was something that, you know, caused her to lose brain cells because she had blood clotting issues. There wasn't enough oxygen able to get to the brain. So it's like a 10-year span that it takes, and it just, to me, mirrors a lot of what you guys are talking about regarding dementia and Alzheimer's, except for with her, she was very combative. You know, there was a whole lot to it, more than just the memory loss and such. And then also, you know, as we're talking, I was thinking in my mind that, you know, maybe I should also say that, you know, in this conversation, whenever we're giving information regarding, you know, our loved ones who get these, I'm going to term it neurological issues, we need to also kind of put that little warning that, you know what, your children will change and they will manipulate you. And of course, that's what happened in our case. And I just wondered, how is it that the person who's the main person is caring for that person, taking good care of that person, how do they become the enemy? How does the person with dementia view them as the enemy? But then those that, when they do show up, and how are they able to manipulate that person? Do you know what I mean when I say manipulating them?
Well, I would say that's a very complex question. I mean, we can have and have had entire programs on elder abuse, and I think whether that person may be mentally debilitated, physically debilitated, emotionally debilitated, there is always, and it may not be dementia, it may not be Alzheimer's, it just may be that person is older and beyond the ability to really take care of themselves. And as I said, you know, elder abuse, and Mr. Baker, you know, you've had a chance, particularly when you were in office, you've spoken about, you know, this issue, and that it is indeed a crime. But I think that is separate from the loss of mental faculties related to dementia and the like. And I'd like Dr. Oyewusi to really talk about, you know, first of all, I think, you know, the aggressive a behavior that may be brought on by dementia, and the anger that we may see in people who have the disease.
Okay. Well, I guess the comment that I will make, Jill, one, is that unfortunately the frontal lobe can be affected, and if that lobe, or, you know, the other parts of the brain that has to do with one ability to make good judgment have a better insight on a situation, or their impulsivity can affect their behavior, and that could be a factor in the scenario that you just mentioned. I'm sorry, are you getting feedback right now?
No, but...
Okay, great. Just wanted to make sure that was clear. Yeah.
I will say, because, you know, my father, actually a year ago this month, had developed signs of dementia. He got lost while driving, and eventually, about a month or so later, he caught COVID, and even though he was in the hospital, but even after doctors were able to treat him for COVID, it left him with severe dementia symptoms and Alzheimer's. I mean, and it was very, very quick. And I lost my dad in May of this year. And so that is beginning to see the signs, the memory issues. And then eventually, I don't know, maybe, you know, November, December, beginning to see him becoming more confused, but also more combative, mm-hmm. you know, in some cases, you know, frightfully so. And then, of course, being treated for COVID for more than a month after the symptoms of COVID were gone after extensive treatment. Thank you, VA hospital. That unfortunately COVID left him with the inability for him to at times recognize me or where he was and the like. And again, that's a completely different thing. But I would say, you know, again, that, you know, there are all kinds of things, you know, Dr. Oyewusi, that we've seen, and it's not just the physical, but, you know, the anger or the change, the personality change, I guess mm-hmm. that's. Yes. Talk to me briefly about that. And then I have a question for Dr. Pettigrew, but please go right ahead.
I didn't know if Mr. Baker had a comment. I thought I might have heard him. But, yes, unfortunately, there's a constellation of symptoms in regards to one's mood. They can have depression. They can have actually develop hallucinations. At least we can say that there could be parts of the brain that we can note changes on imaging that can correlate with that. But I feel like sometimes it goes beyond the things that you can see on some of the tests that we have available to us.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Baker,
unfortunately, yeah.
Did you notice a personality change in your wife beyond the physical manifestations?
Yeah, I mean, what we saw, and this happens a lot, is that, you know, we went through a period where she got angry.
Mm.
My son, who had been away to college for about 5 years, college and graduate school, when he came home, she didn't recognize him. And so there were issues dealing with that. And so around holidays, she would get really anxious. So there were these up and down moments where she would be very pleasant and then she would be angry the next moment. And I think one of the things I want to emphasize is that, you know, we weren't prepared for that. And that's why it's very important to have a support group. It's why it's very important to have a neurologist and places like the Alzheimer's Association that can give you information. Because one of the things I do want to leave your listeners with is that while this is a very hard and difficult journey, it doesn't have to be one without moments of, you know, real quality of life and love. I can't think, even during the worst parts of it, and there were some really bad parts of it, where there weren't tools that were available to help us through it. And so the time that we spent with, and I say this to folks who are caregivers, there's a way that you can make it both rewarding for you and the loved one that you have there, so their quality of life is good, is best that you can make it. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to do what you're doing today, and that is to have people get information to recognize the signs and to be prepared for it so that you can make those decisions so that your life and their life is a quality one.
Mm-hmm. Jill, thank you so much for your phone
You're
call.
Welcome.
Dr. Pettigrew, I want to ask you, it just seems that all of these things are just coming together at the right time this week. There were articles in the Washington Post and the New York Times this week that spoke about a daily crossword puzzle helping with slow cognizant decline. We've been hearing, for example, for years about the use of parlor games. I'm telling my age and saying and calling that, and as well as calisthenics, age appropriate calisthenics, to help with the onset of dementia. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, especially in the context of, you know, we don't yet have really effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. We're making great progress. You know, and from my understanding of the research that's been done, it seems like being cognitively active, learning new things, maybe doing crossword puzzles or learning new games or languages, really may be associated with better cognition over time, maybe less cognitive decline. Mm-hmm. More stronger evidence, I think, is for the physical activity, as you mentioned. And mm-hmm. we're seeing some new studies that came out recently that are looking at the impact of kind of exercising 3 or 4 times a week and how it's helping people maintain their cognition. And these are people with some mild memory changes already. So I think there's really some great promise for staying active and engaged as we age and learning new things and doing new things and helping to reduce our risk for dementia.
Do we understand why more physical activity may have a positive effect on the onset of this disease? I mean, obviously, from the time that you're a child, you know, and when we talk about the modern discussions about health, you know, we want kids to get off the iPad and the video games and to go outside mm-hmm. like they used to do, mm-hmm. you know, way yeah. back in the Flintstone days. But but as we become, you know, adults and become older adults, and I think we all can agree that the world, you know, has changed, and there's one group of us that are really, you know, we've got our gym rats and our exercise gurus and your jocks and jockettes, but then there's such a larger segment of the population that if it's easier to bring it to us, we're not going to go to it and get any exercise, including walking around the block, and so. You know, how might exercise contribute to the fight against dementia and eventually Alzheimer's? You know, Dr. Pettigrew, do we have any idea why?
You know, I think it's because it's so multifactorial. I mean, just the fact that mm-hmm. physical activity benefits so many different systems that are important for our overall health and wellness. I mean, obviously, it's important for our heart health and for maintaining a healthy weight, having good bone strength and balance and coordination, but then it also seems to be affecting, it, you know, helps us sleep better when we get some good exercise, we get better quality sleep and maybe reduces anxiety. But then physical activity also seems to be related to brain health. And we don't understand exactly how it's linked to brain health, but one kind of obvious possible connection is the connection between the heart and the brain and maintaining good blood flow to the brain for keeping everything healthy in that system working well.
Mm-hmm. What do you suggest for your patients, Dr. Oyewusi, as far as physical activity and diet as well? Is there any evidence at all that diet may contribute one way or another to this disease?
Yes. So with a healthy diet, meaning low inflammatory diet, more fish oils, more leafy vegetables, that will decrease the plaque formation. And as Dr. Pettigrew highlighted, cardiovascular health is helpful because you're increasing blood flow to the brain tissue. So that will keep the brain cells healthy and less likely to develop those changes that are associated with dementia. I also agree with her because there's so many factors that play into it. We don't know 100% why exercise helps, but we know that at the very least, which is the foundation of physical therapy, occupational therapy, there are increased synapses that occur with exercise. Mm-hmm. There are synapses that occur with reading and exercising your brain with doing Sudoku and word games. So the best thing to do is prevention, because once those plaques are laid, you know, the after effects are hard to reverse. Just as Dr. Pettigrew mentioned, there's unfortunately no therapies that we have at the moment to reverse that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to focus on prevention.
Well, Dr.
And as early as possible, too.
Well, Dr. Oyebuosi, you'll be happy to know that I had a great big old pot of fresh greens on my stove yesterday. So, and I had, you know, it took me all day to clean them, but you know, I'm trying to keep myself healthy. You know, Mr. Baker, I'd be remiss if we didn't give you just a moment to talk about the foundation that is named, you know, after your wife, the Krista Beverly Foundation, beyond the fact that it bears her name.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. And thank you for doing this show. One of the reasons we started the foundation was to bring awareness around Alzheimer's and dementia-related issues so that more people are doing exactly what you're talking about today, and that is how do we start preparing, exercising early, eating right, understanding how the diet, exercise, learning a new language, all of those things can help stave off this. And even once the disease is diagnosed, you know, how you can help. And so our foundation is about, one, raising awareness and raising dollars that go directly to research, because that's the only way, as the doctors have both said, there is no medicine right now that you can take that will prevent or slow down the disease that has been proven effective. And so we have to do a lot more research. We need a lot more money. And so the three things that we try to do with the Krista Beverly Foundation is awareness, advocacy, and raising dollars that go directly to impact this. So thanks for giving us this opportunity. If I would be remiss if I didn't say the importance of the Alzheimer's Association and their ability and the work that they're doing on this disease.
Well, thank you again. And you know, you're always welcome on this program, and that you have really kind of been, you know, since the passing of your wife, one of the voices, not only in Prince George's, but in the state of Maryland, to kind of keep this information out in the forefront. And you've always been very, very transparent about that, which I think is important for those who are going through this or suspect that it may be coming, that we constantly need to have awareness raised. I have a few moments, and I wanted to give both of our doctors an opportunity just to share, you know, some final thoughts about it. Dr. Pettigrew, your final thoughts about where we are as we continue to fight this disease.
Yeah, I think we're in a really great position from a research standpoint in trying to develop new treatments that will stop the spread of the brain changes that occur with Alzheimer's disease. But in the meantime, as we continue that, I think we all just need to do our best to do what we can to reduce our own risk by staying active in any way possible.
Absolutely. And Dr. Oyewusi, a final thought from you as well, please.
Well, yes, I would say that I would like to echo a comment that Mr. Baker mentioned in terms of having a multidisciplinary, a multifactorial approach to treatment. So you'll have a neurologist, psychiatrist, a therapist on hand, and that's a very limited list in terms of who's available to not only treat the patient but also caregivers. And then I would encourage caregivers to look out to those foundations like the Alzheimer's Foundation to look up clinical trials. And I would like to actually highlight one of the trials that one of my colleagues, Dr. Evar Nwulia, who is a psychiatrist at Howard University, is conducting, where they offer an intervention that could be done at home to hopefully help in the treatment of the cognitive symptoms associated with Alzheimer's disease. And if anyone is interested in finding out more about the study, you can look at www.evonmedics.com.
EVON, as in Nancy, Medics?
Yes. .com.
.com. EVON, Medics.com. Well, I want to thank all of you for keeping this conversation well-rounded, you know, well-informed. You know, Dr. Mosanola Oyewusi, I appreciate your time. I know that you were on call today and that we could have lost you at any point because of your responsibilities at the hospital. So I appreciate you making yourself available. Also, Dr. Corinne Pettigrew at Johns Hopkins, thank you so much for your expertise. And as always, Rusher and Baker, we continue to keep you in our thoughts as you continue to raise awareness about Alzheimer's. So thank you all so much for talking to us.
And thank you for doing it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, November 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.